It's a joy to be with you this morning in the house of the Lord. It's good to see the house well filled. It's good to see each one of the visitors with us, and a special welcome to worship together. Now this morning I've noticed something. I've noticed that the front is pretty empty, and I've noticed that the back is full. I don't like preaching to empty benches. I don't like looking to the back. If someone would like to humble themselves this morning and come up and fill this whole front bench, I would appreciate it. And my wife would be glad to have some of the sisters move up and sit beside her this morning. So if you could find it in your heart to do that this morning, feel free. And while you're thinking about that, I really would like to see some response this morning and fill up the front. Thank you, Titus. And some more of you, brethren, come on out. I did hear from Brother Edwin. Talk to him by WhatsApp. If you have WhatsApp, he would be glad for your encouragement. Find it in your heart to encourage your brother. It's a long, hard drive to Bangladesh. A bus trip of 10 hours, and it's hot, and it's dirty. And his luggage got soaked with some foul-smelling liquid. And so he had to get over there. He didn't have any clean clothes. That's not how you like to start a vacation. It's not a vacation, a trip. So keep your brother in your prayers this week. We don't know what Brother Edwin's going through, but just pray for his spiritual safety. Pray that the Lord would protect him. Give him physical strength. The journey is hard. The journey is long. I am still thinking about Brother Edwin's preached last Sunday. Preached about some choices, that the far-reaching effect of our choices. Just little choices that we make and how it affects our life so drastically. That's my words, what he preached on. And I've been thinking about the children of Israel, just the little choices that they make to go along. Do you think there was anybody there that thought maybe they should just stay in Egypt and let the rest of them go on that wild venture? Maybe they just went along because everybody else was doing it. The whole story is just, we see the big picture. We see God leading them, but could they see the leading of God? Choices. A month from then, did they think back and say, what a stupid choice? Or did they say, wow, that was just, I am so glad I chose to identify with the people of God. It was just a small choice, but it was little choices upon little choices that got them to where they were going to be. The children of Israel got tired of being identified as the people of God. They got tired of it. They wanted to be like everybody else around them. You know the story. It was so great and glorious at first, but then they got tired of it. I've got a question for you this morning. You ever get tired of being a strange people, a called out people, a different people, a weird people, a bizarre people? Do you get tired of that? Do you like it? Do you like being different this morning? Do you like it when someone calls you strange? Do you like it if someone tells you you're different? I don't. I like to fit in. I like to fit in with the crowd. I don't like to stand out. I don't like people to think I'm strange. I don't like to think I'm different. Children often come up with that. And they say, well, everybody else is doing it. See, what they're really saying is I don't want to be different. I don't want to stand out. Everybody else is doing it, so I'm going to do it too. School children say that a lot. Well, all my friends are doing it, or they all have it. And so the flip side of it is if they have it to fit in, I need it too. We're talking about, do you like to be strange? Do you like to be different this morning? As a young Christian, I struggled a lot with wondering, why do I have to be so different? Now, I know we have a lot of people here this morning. We come from all walks of life. But why do I have to be so different? Is it really necessary to live, we'll say, the plain lifestyle? Because the world that we're a part of, they have their parties. They dress the way they want to. Drive the vehicles they want to. Listen to the music they want to. And they got a great testimony for what God is doing for them. Or so it seems. And so, at times in our life, we wonder. And we struggle with it. Why do we have to be so different? Can't we just blend in with the people around us? A few years ago, I took the family to Niagara Falls. And I have never felt like I was such a gazing stock as I was on that trip. I don't know what it was, but everywhere we went, people stopped and wanted to take our picture. They actually wanted to pose with us. And it got to the point where I just told my wife, I said, let's just get out of here. I'm tired of it. It was clear funny. I mean, you would walk past people and turn around and they're standing there taking your picture. Maybe they never seen a family with two boys and three girls. Maybe they never seen girls wearing dresses and boys wearing shirts, or dressed modestly, let's say. See, the world we live in, they don't think nothing of undress. So to see a well-dressed person makes you stand out. It makes you look different. Do you like it? The title is this morning, Are You a Strange Person? Are you a strange person? If you go to Walmart, if you go to the local mall, or if you go to the airport, you see a lot of strange people, at least in our minds. I guess they look at us and they think we're strange, but we look at them and we think they're strange too. I seen a lady the other day on the sidewalk here in Chambersburg, green hair, waving at people, trying for attention. Strange. What makes someone dye their hair green? Or what makes people put rings in all parts of their bodies? Why would they do it? Maybe it's for acceptance. Maybe they're trying to fit into a crowd. What makes people tattoo their bodies all over? I believe they're looking for a niche for acceptance, to fit in with that crowd of people. Somewhere, they're trying to find acceptance of someone. Now, occasionally, there's an exception to every rule. Occasionally, you'll have people that just want to be different just for the fun of being different. If I drive a car to work and everybody else does too, then if I really want to be different, I'm going to drive a one-ton pickup because everybody else drives a car. We have those type of people. You know who they are. Or maybe there's just rebelling against the norms. If everybody does it, I'm not going to do it. I'm going to do something totally different. We're talking about reasons why people are being strange. Turn with me to 2 Corinthians chapter 6. Second Corinthians chapter 6 talks about being a strange people. It talks about a separated people. Verse 17 says, Wherefore come out from among them, and be ye separate, saith the Lord, and touch not the unclean thing, and I will receive you. Come out from among them, and be separate. Be separate. What's this mean? How do we come out and be separate? Does that mean we become a separate culture? We come out from this world, and we become a separate culture that we live in. And so we dress different. You think of the Laura Ingalls Wilder. That was a craze in its day. Everybody loved it. Wear dresses, wear long braids, and a part of a culture. Live in a little cabin, whatever that culture existed of. But they're proud of it. They're proud of their culture. Or maybe more modern today is it's a culture of come out from among them and be ye separate and be a prepper. Be prepared for the unknowns in this world. When all the norms cease to exist, you'll be ready. Is that what it's saying? Come out and be separate. Be prepared. Be prepared for what? What does it mean to come out and be separate? Or maybe, as I already said, maybe it just means to come out and rebel. Rebel against the norms. If everybody else is doing it, I'm going to do the opposite because I'm separate. I'm not going to fit in. If you're for it, I'm against it. We live in a world that there's a lot of that. Is that what it's saying? Come out from among them and be ye separate. Or maybe it says, be so wrapped up in your work that you don't even care about what people see. I call them geeky people. When you meet them and they're not with it. You take somebody that's all wrapped up in their technology and you try to hold decent conversation and they can't even relate. They're still thinking about their computer programming that they're doing back home. They're so wrapped up in their job. Maybe it's a doctor in his medical degree. He could care less how he's dressed. His pants and his shirt don't match because he's thinking about his job. He could care less what people think of him. Is that what it means to come out and be ye separate? I heard of this illustration of a businessman, suit and tie, and he was going to the airport, and he's running behind schedule. And he goes ripping through the airport, trying to catch his flight. And at that last little bit, he's almost there, and he trips, and he falls. And his briefcase, goes flying across the floor, crashes into a post, flips open, and his papers go all across the floor. Now, is this how the businessman normally enters the room? Of course not. See, he was not worried what people were thinking of him because he had one goal in mind, and that was to get to where he wanted to go. He didn't care what people thought about him. What kind of separation is God requiring for his people this morning? Wherefore, come out from among them, and be ye separate, saith the Lord. What is the separation? Is God saying, be a weird person this morning? Is he saying, be a geeky person? Be a different person? Be strange? What's he actually calling us to? In Titus 2, verse 14, 1 Peter 2, verse 9, it says that you're going to be a peculiar people. Maybe you like when someone calls you peculiar. You just act pretty peculiar. That doesn't sound very complimentary. But God says, you're supposed to be a peculiar people. Now, that word peculiar has a different meaning than what the way we normally use the word peculiar. But some people try to interpretate, what does this peculiar mean? I've heard of homeschool families say, well, you think you're a peculiar people. Christian people just look at the world, figure out what they're going to do, and you just do the exact opposite. Is that what God is saying that we're supposed to do this morning, to be a peculiar people? Just do the opposite of what the world's doing. No, that's not what we're supposed to do. So many times, we're talking about separation, what God requires of his people. I have so often judged people by the way they are dressed. We passed a car this morning, and we looked at them and said, oh, they're not plain people. Well, how did we know? See, we looked in the car, and we tried to differentiate who these people were. We judged them by the coat they were wearing, by the dress color, by the veiling size, by the vehicle they drove. Maybe it was their color combination of dresses. We have church groups that do that. You fill in the blanks. And I'm not cutting that down, but that's what we do in our minds. We look at people and we make a judgment call of how separated they are by how they look, or how separated they are by what they drive. Is this really what separation is about this morning? When God says, come out from among them, be ye separate, is that what he's saying? We as a church group take a stand against musical instruments. Now that's a present application that we have in our church group here, that we control the music that we listen to. And we listen to a cappella music. We do not go out to the instrumental music. And there's nothing wrong with that. That has kept us from listening to wrong music. That has kept us from probably going down a wrong road. But I have good friends that go to other churches, and their church group allows music. They can listen to instrumental music if they would choose to. Now, who is more separated? Maybe they are. Maybe the church group that can listen to music know how to control their tastes, and I don't. Think about that. We need to have present applications. I found this statement. It says, a principle without an active application is a dead principle. And that is true. If we just have a principle and we don't have any practical application of it, it's just a dead principle. In other words, our church is responsible to make present day applications, to make it real for us. There's nothing wrong with that. But where does separation occur? It has to be more than just our church standards. Separation has to come from a separated heart and mind. Turn with me to 1 Peter chapter 2. First Peter chapter 2, verse 9 says, but ye are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, an holy nation, a peculiar people, that ye should show forth the praise of him who hath called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. A peculiar people, a chosen people, a called out people, people that have a special place in God's heart. You do this morning. The children of Israel were a peculiar people. They had a special place, a chosen. They were chosen for a work. We are chosen. We're peculiar people this morning. But there's only one way we can sing the praises of God. Did you notice that? It's in that last part. It says that ye should show forth the praises of him who hath called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. There's no way I can sing God's praises until I am separated in my heart, until I am his peculiar people. And then and only then can I begin to sing forth the praises of what he has done for me. Let's keep on reading. Verse 10. Which in time past were not a people, but are now the people of God, which have not obtained mercy, but now have obtained mercy. Dearly beloved, I beseech you as strangers and pilgrims, abstain from fleshly lust, which war against the soul. Having your conversation honest among the Gentiles, that whereas they speak against you as evildoers, they may by your good works, which they shall behold, glorify God in the day of visitation. He's calling us to be that separated people. Be the strange people. Be the strange people that God would want you to have. We are strange people this morning in the eyes of the world. He says, you abstain from fleshly lust. The world don't abstain from that at all. They just do what they want to do. He says, you have an honest testimony. The world doesn't have an honest testimony. We truly are a strange people, and they look at us. They don't understand. They just shake their heads and say, you are a strange people. We don't understand. They notice the difference. Verse 12 talks about that honest walk that we have among the ungodly people that we live around. And they watch our lives, they observe, and they know what we stand for. Now let's go back to 2 Corinthians chapter 6. It's where we started out. Second Corinthians chapter 6, I'd like to start reading at verse 11. And try to get some more verses to put this into perspective of thinking of living a separated life. Verse 11, O ye Corinthians, our mouth is open unto you, our heart is enlarged. Ye are not straitened in us, but ye are straitened in your own bowels. Now for a recompense in the same, I speak as unto my children, be ye also enlarged. Be ye not unequally yoked together with unbelievers. For what fellowship hath righteousness with unrighteousness? And what communion hath light with darkness? And what concord hath Christ with Belial? Or what part hath he that believeth with an infidel? And what agreement hath the temple of God with idols? For ye are the temple of the living God. And as God hath said, I will dwell in them and walk in them, and I will be their God, and they shall be my people. Wherefore, come out from among them, and be ye separate, saith the Lord, and touch not the unclean thing, and I will receive you, and will be a father unto you, and ye shall be my sons and daughters, saith the Lord Almighty. As you read these verses, they may seem, especially the first several verses, let me read it in a different translation, just a general translation. It says, ye have been speaking freely to you, men of Corinth. We have opened our heart. There is room there for you, yet there is no room in your love for us. Can you not, in return, I appeal to you as I should to children, open your hearts to us. Do not enter into inconsistent relationships with those who reject the faith. But what partnership can there be between righteousness and lawlessness? Or what has light to do with darkness? What harmony can there be between Christ and Belial? Or what can those who accept the faith have in common with those who reject it? What agreement can these be between a temple of God and idols? And we are a temple of the living God. That is what God meant when he said, I will dwell among them and walk among them, and I will be their God, and they shall be my people. Wherefore, come out from among the nations and separate yourselves from them, saith the Lord, and touch nothing impure, and I will welcome you. And I will be a father to you, and ye shall be my sons and daughters, saith the Lord, the ruler of all. A person that is separated to God, according to these verses, does not wear clothes or do business different than those around us just to prove they are different. But they do it because they are different. They have a total change of heart. They do it because they are different. They have different goals. They think different. They're not doing it just to prove a point. It's a genuine change of heart. It's going to affect their life. It's going to change their actions, and it's going to be results. They're not trying to prove anything. They are separated because they are different. It's easier to have separation and what we would call our externals. It's easier just to dress different. It's easier just to drive different colored car, whatever. You understand what I'm saying. But it doesn't change the heart. Just changing the externals, just being separated in the external things we do has no change with my heart. We could use the illustration of I wear long pants. If I came up here this morning wearing shorts on this pulpit, you would really have a problem with me, and you probably should. But you see, I've been taught. I grew up in a culture where we wear long pants. And I expect you to wear long pants, you expect I wear long pants, and we wouldn't think nothing of it. My dad has, and my boys are going to do that. That's just what we do. And so if it just becomes a tradition where we wear long pants, and I don't have a changed heart, all of a sudden, I can wear any kind of long pants. It doesn't matter what the design is. It doesn't matter what the brand is. It doesn't matter what color they are, just as long as they're long pants. That's the point. Second thing that's going to happen is I become self-righteous. And so then I start to look around. And you know, if you don't wear pants like I do, I don't have no time for you because I wear long pants. That's what happens when a person begins to live by the externals only and they do not have a change of heart. We become critical with people that have a different application than we do. For you sisters, you could use the cape dress. The cape dress has been very helpful in the Mennonite church. And we wouldn't think of not wearing the cape dress. But we could begin to forget the very reason why we wear a cape dress. We wear a cape dress for modesty. And so if we forget the point, we can wear cape dresses, but it don't do anything for us. And they could become immodest. And then we can begin to pat ourselves on the back and say, I wear long pants. I wear a cape dress. It doesn't do anything for me. It is just changing the externals. And separation of the heart and mind has long ceased to exist. We see that happening in churches all around us where people, they don't have that governing influence of a changed heart, a changed mind, to help them make the practical applications that they need. So then they become frustrated at church life. And it's just empty tradition, it's empty rules. And they say, I'm out of here, I'm going to a different church. And it's just an endless cycle. It just starts over and over. An attitude like that causes a lot of damage to separation. And it becomes disgusting to the world around us, because it's just an empty form. True separation of the mind is more difficult. It's hard to separate our mind. It's easy to separate the externals. But to separate my mind, to separate my heart, that is difficult. Turn over a few pages to 2 Corinthians chapter 10. Verse 5 talks about casting down the imaginations of every high thing that exalteth itself against the knowledge of God, and bringing into captivity every thought to the obedience of Christ. A changed mind is one that God can get a hold of. God can change the way we think. It's a separated mind. One that doesn't think like this world thinks. One that's going to make strange decisions according to the way this world makes their decisions. It's going to look strange to the world around us because we have a different focus. We have a different motivation. It's that separation on a spiritual level. It's not that separation so much on a physical level. It's not like we're out here just living a cult life. We do have to live. We do have to sleep. But it's that separation on a spiritual level. The very things that I value, the values of life, we allow God to change it. Dictates my affections, what I allow in my heart. It will influence my love for my family, my friends, and my enemies. It will influence what and how much I eat or drink. It will affect what I wear, the house that I live in, and the vehicle I drive. See, those things do matter, but only when God can change my mind, change my thoughts, and bring every thought into the captivity of Christ. We're thinking about the separation on a spiritual level. And are you separated this morning? Recently, we've been talking as ministry in the Pilgrim Conference as reviewing the decrees that our church, our practical applications. And to me, that it becomes a scary time when I begin to think about what will this congregation do if we allow or we make changes to the standards that we have always clung to. Do you have an inner change of heart that would allow you to keep on practicing what you believe, no matter? I'll just read what I wrote. It says, if a church group would decide to change some of their applications, you get to see very quickly where there is a separation of heart and mind. If there is separation of heart and mind, a church can make changes and be fine because people have a separated heart and mind. If there is not separation of heart and mind, you want to maintain some sort of separation. Beginning that process will be very dangerous because people have no stopping place. They don't know what to do. And so what if we changed that you could wear shorts? I'm trying to make it drastic enough to keep you with me. Would you say, praise the Lord, I've wanted to wear shorts all the life, and you go out and buy 5 pairs tomorrow? See, that's what happened years ago when the conference The local conference said, now it's okay to get a TV. And they claimed all the TVs were sold out of the stores in the local area. There was no TV. Because everybody wanted a TV. There was no separation in their heart and mind. And the minute they got what they wanted, TVs were sold out. What is your governing principles in your heart and mind this morning? I trust that God is the one that is controlling that. Where there is true separation of heart and mind, separation of life and action will follow. Where there is true separation of heart and mind, separation of life and action will follow. And so a separated life is important. I'm not saying it's not, but I'm saying the first part is that we have to have that separated heart and mind before we begin to have a separated life. My actions provide a glimpse into my heart. The way I respond to you as a church family provide a glimpse into my heart. My responses, the way I dress on a Sunday morning provides an insight of how separated I am in my heart, in my mind. My words, the things that I say, the books that I read, my music, really tell the truth about who I really am. There's a study of ants called myrmecology. So can a myrmecologist and an astronomer work together? The study of ants, they say, a myrmecologist studies ants because they think an ant society is the ideal form for human society. And so they want to, I guess they peer, I don't know how they study ants, but they try to watch how ants relate. The astronomer looks into the heavens and they see the big, glorious, can those things work together? And we say, well, not really. The one is, they're trying to focus on the small. The astronomer's looking in the big. Their work really doesn't relate because they're two different goals in their life. Radically different things. And it's the same way that we relate to the world. We're radically different. Turn with me to Ephesians 5. Ephesians 5, verse 2. I'm going to start with verse 3. But fornication and all uncleanness or covetousness, let it not be once named among you as becometh saints. Neither filthiness nor foolish talking nor jesting, which are not convenient, but rather giving of thanks. For this ye know, that no whoremonger nor unclean person nor covetous man who is an idolater hath any inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and of God. Let no man deceive you with vain words, for because of these things cometh the wrath of God upon the children of disobedience. Be not ye therefore partakers with them, for ye were sometime darkness, but now are ye light in the Lord. Walk as children of light. Verse 10, proving that which is acceptable unto the Lord, and have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather reprove them. Do we have the same goals as this world that we live in? No. Our studies are far apart. The one is looking into the heavens. The other is just focused on this earth. Just focused on the trivial things. We have nothing in common with this world. The very breath of a Christian, their testimony just speaks volumes about what they stand for. The testimony of a living God, the person that they're following, it shows whether I am separated or not. I found this story of a young persecuted Christian. It was in the Voices of Martyrs. It's a current publication that you maybe will get. But it was a young man that was out starting churches. And he was called to go over into, I don't know where it was, he didn't say, a persecuted place where Christianity is not loved. And he began to witness, him and his wife. I guess he had a young family. And he was telling others about Christ, spreading the gospel. And the local elders got tired of it. And they began to come over and to beat this man up. They would beat him up. I guess not real bad, but roughed him up and let him go. And they started to do this on a consistent basis. They would gather together, go over, beat the man up, and go home. Now, you would think you would eventually just get tired of it and shut up. I guess it really comes down to how separated you are and how much you believe what you believe. And so they continued to beat this man up on a consistent basis until one day the one man beat up his son. And it was just too much for this missionary. He couldn't take it. And he grabbed a knife and he went after the attacker with the intentions to kill him. And he got away. He didn't get his job accomplished and he went home and his conscience smote him. This is no way for a man to act. He couldn't sleep. And so he got up and he went to his, I guess he knew where he lived, and knocked on his door and he said, "I've come to apologize. I'm sorry." That is no way that Christ would respond. "I failed. I'm sorry." He asked for forgiveness. What would you do? The beatings didn't stop. They kept right on beating up the man. And eventually, one of the tribal people said, "I don't understand it. You're just so different." They couldn't get him to recant. He kept preaching Jesus Christ, and they wanted him probably to preach, I don't know what they wanted, probably the local religion, whatever that was. See, his testimony shone. He was a strange person. And it spoke volumes to the world. Turn with me to 1 Peter chapter 4. First Peter 4, verse 3 says, "For the time past of our life may suffice us to have wrought the will of the Gentiles, when we walked in lasciviousness, lust, excess of wine, revelings, banquetings, and abominable idolatries, wherein they think it strange that ye run not with them to the same excess of riot, speaking evil of you." See, the world doesn't get it. They don't understand what makes you tick. The scripture says so. He says the world's going to look at you and they're going to say, "You are strange." And it gives you a tremendous chance to witness for Christ, to be able to explain, "It's what's in my heart. It's not just an external lifestyle, but it's a changed life. We're serving someone totally different. Our studies are so far apart. No, you don't understand." The Pilgrim's Progress talks about when Pilgrim was going into Vanity Fair. The world was partying. The world was living it up. They loved their fairs. It was a grand place to spend your money and to live great. And it talks about how they poked their fingers in their ears, and they looked steadfast because they had to pass through this place. And it said the world, the people that day looked at them and said they were strange people. And they couldn't understand them. And they said, "Well, what do you want to buy?" And they said, "We want to buy the truth." And they kept looking up to heaven and it said they couldn't understand it. They were just different. And they ended up taking them captive and putting them in jail and trying to, if you read that story, it just upset the whole town. Because these two people had a total different vision, a total different focus. The world thinks it's strange. They don't understand. See, the world can understand. If I beat you up, if you beat me up, I'll beat you up. If you hit me on the side of the face, I'll hit you back. They can understand that. The world can understand that if I don't like somebody, I'll gossip about them, because they like to gossip. So they can understand that. The world can understand being envious. The world can understand being covetous. The world can understand when we try to attract attention to myself and do all kinds of strange things to get attention. They can understand that because that's who they are. That's because that's the lifestyle they live. That's because they do it all the time. But they don't understand when a godly man will turn a cheek to someone to hit, to someone that beat them up, and to do a kind deed. They do not understand when you offer forgiveness to a wrong that's done. They do not understand how you can be content with what you have. They cannot understand why you would live your life for God when everybody else is out having fun. In Acts, he said, you turn the world upside down. They don't understand it. It's this total wrong concept to them. It brings conviction to the world. I'd like to turn to John chapter 15. It talks about when the world hates us. John chapter 15, verse 18 says, if the world hates you, know that it hated me before it hated you. If ye were of the world would love his own, but because ye are not of the world, but I have chosen you out of this world, therefore the world hateth you. Remember the word that I said unto you, the servant is not greater than his Lord. If they have persecuted me, they will also persecute you. If they have kept my saying, they will keep yours also. But all these things will they do unto you for my name's sake, because they know not him that sent me. If I had not come and spoken unto them, they had not had sin. But now they have no cloak for their sin. He that hateth me hateth my Father also. If I had not done among them the works which none other man did, they had not had sin. But now have they both seen and hated both me and my Father. But this cometh to pass, that the word might be fulfilled that is written in their law, they hated me without a cause. A person of this world can dress, they really can dress the way they want to. They can do what they want to. They can live their lifestyle the way they want to. But if you live a separated life, there's nothing really like it in this world. It's going to stop your neighbors in their tracks. It's going to stop the world in their tracks, and they're going to look at you and say, you're strange. You're different. They can't understand it. See, the world can understand a hard work ethic. They like to do that too. The world can understand a Mennonite pinching pennies to make money. They can understand that because that's what they like to do too. But when they see a man that is willing to take off work for God's work, they can't understand it. When they see a man ready to suffer wrong and still be joyful, they can't understand it. It doesn't make sense. Are you a strange person this morning? Are you a strange man or lady this morning, or are you not? What kind of separation does God require or desire for me this morning? Let's kneel for a word of prayer.